is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Tens of thousands of Israelis have surged into the streets in an outpouring of grief and anger after six more hostages were found dead in Gaza. It appears to be the largest such demonstration in 11 months of war. Demonstrators are urging Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to reach a ceasefire deal to bring the remaining captives home. Israel's largest trade union has called a general strike from Monday to further pressure the government. It's the first such strike since the war began, and it's expected to disrupt major sectors of the economy, including banking, health care, and the country's main airport. Palestinian health authorities and United Nations agencies have begun a large-scale campaign of vaccinations against polio in the Gaza Strip. They hope to prevent an outbreak in the territory that has been ravaged by the Israel-Hamas war. Authorities plan to vaccinate children in central Gaza until Wednesday before moving on to the more devastated north and south. Campaign aims to reach about 640,000 children. Israel has agreed to limit pauses in fighting to facilitate the campaign. Gaza recently reported its first polio case in 25 years, a 10-month-old boy now paralyzed in the leg. Russia says air defenses have intercepted and destroyed 158 Ukrainian drones, including two over Moscow and nine over the surrounding region. In total, 46 drones were shot down over the Kursk region, where Ukraine has sent its forces in recent weeks in the largest incursion on Russian soil since World War II. Ukrainian drone strikes have brought the fight far from the front line into the heart of Russia. Since the beginning of the year, Ukraine has stepped up aerial assaults on Russian soil, targeting the refineries and oil terminals to slow down the Kremlin's assault. This is VOA News. Investigators with the National Transportation Safety Board are collecting evidence at the scene of a commercial bus crash in the U.S. state of Mississippi that killed seven people and injured dozens of others. The National Transportation Safety Board says that the 2018 Volvo bus was traveling westbound on Interstate 20 in Bovina early Saturday when a left front tire failed and the vehicle veered into an embankment and overturned. It says six.
A far-right party has won a state election for the first time in post-World War II Germany in the country's east, while it looks set to finish a very close second to mainstream conservatives in a second vote. The new party, founded by a prominent leftist, also made a strong impact in Sunday's elections, while the party's and Chancellor Olaf Scholz's unpopular national government obtained extremely weak results. Now, the parties say they will not put the far-right Alternative for Germany in power by joining it in a coalition. Even so, its strength will make forming new state governments extremely difficult, forcing them into exotic coalitions. Pope Francis is now making the longest, farthest, and most challenging trip of his pontificate when he goes to Asia and Oceania this week. He will clock 32,814 kilometers by air during his September 2nd through 13th visit into Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, East Timor, and Singapore. That far surpasses any of his previous 44 trips and notches one of the longest papal trips ever. In terms of days on the road and distances traveled, that's no small feat for a pope who turns 88 in December and uses a wheelchair and lost part of a lung to a respiratory infection as a young man. U.S. immigration policy has shifted the migrant landscape in Mexico City, far from the shared border. The teeming capital that was merely a transit point for some migrants has now become a temporary destination. Migrants have increasingly established informal settlements over the past year, where they wait to receive U.S. asylum appointments from the relative security of the capital. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
We'll be right back.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Monday, September 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. UNICEF says it is facing a fresh wave of internally displaced persons in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
There's a growing number of new informal camps where people are just arriving and setting up in the middle of nowhere, where we are struggling to keep up with the pace of the arrival of new people.
SADC removes Eswatini's political crisis from its agenda. We'll hear the viewpoints of both the Eswatini government and the opposition. Labor leaders have called a one-day general strike today, Monday, demanding that Prime Minister Netanyahu reach a ceasefire deal with Hamas. Gabon's military junta marks 1 year since the overthrow of President Ali Bongo Ondimba.
I would like to give them from 0 to 10, and 10 is the best. I would like to give a 5. For the rest of what's going on, I'm not that pleased because I believe that the promises that he had made to the Gabonese people, most of them have not been fulfilled.
And Harris criticizes Trump for Arlington Cemetery incident, while some Gold Star families defend his visit. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says it is facing a fresh wave of internally displaced persons, or IDPs, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, complicating efforts to provide aid and mitigate the spread of the mpox disease. Grant Leite, a country representative who just returned from Goma and the Ituri provinces, tells VOA's Chinedu Ofor that it is a race against time.
There's a growing number of new informal camps where people are just arriving and setting up in the middle of nowhere, where we are struggling to keep up with the pace of the arrival of new people. This is partly related to lack of available resources to respond to the overall scale of this crisis.
Are you saying in some ways you are being overwhelmed by the ever-increasing flowing of new IDPs setting up some of these camps?
That's exactly right. It's these new informal camps, which is a question of a race against time. But also, we can do that. We know how to do that. But we need additional resources to do so.
Now, one of the biggest concerns, especially in camps and where you have a large number of people, is the growing threat of mpox. Has that been contained? Can it be contained?
This is indeed a major concern. The province where we have the highest number of cases is just adjacent to North Kivu. It's in South Kivu, with a high mobility of people moving between South and North Kivu. The concern is it's just a question of time before mpox will actually come into these camps. All the more need to ensure that there is good running water, that there are good sanitation systems, because these are all factors to prevent or to help prevent the spread of mpox.
Are you putting any protocols in place to try as much as you can to maybe stop it entirely from coming in? Is that even possible?
UNICEF is working on two fronts. First of all, to prevent the further transmission, but then also to rapidly treat and contain and indeed end the transmission of this new variant of mpox. The majority of cases are indeed children, over 63%, with over 80% of the fatalities being children. So UNICEF's working on risk communication to make sure that children and their parents understand how the transmission works and the measures they need to take. We're also working on supporting health structures and schools to ensure that there are the right conditions to prevent the spread. We are also working on getting ready for the new vaccines, which are going to be flowing into the country as next week.
That's Grant Leite, the UNICEF DRC country representative, speaking from Kinshasa with VOA's Chinedu Ofor. A Gabonese human rights and democracy activist says the military junta in Libreville deserves a grade of C for its performance. This as the junta marks its first year since the overthrow of President Ali Bongo Ondimba. Meanwhile, transitional President Oligui Nguema has unveiled the draft of a future constitution. Rights and Democracy activist Frank Jock Ting tells me that while the military deserves credit for overthrowing the 50-year dynasty of the Bongo family, it has not done enough economically for the people of Gabon.
I would like to give them from 0 to 10, and 10 is the best. I would like to give a 5.
Wow, that's like 50%.
Exactly.
Why do you say that?
I say 50% because I believe with all of my countrymen, we are very pleased and happy that we were freed from the Bongo regime. I fought 14 years since 2009, so Ali Bongo will no longer be in power. We have accomplished that. But for the rest of what's going on, I'm not that pleased because I believe that the promises that he had made to the Gabonese people, most of them have not been fulfilled.
What are some of the promises?
I'm referring specifically on economic, for example. More than 40% of my countrymen still in poverty, and I believe that their life have not changed since Ali Bongo is gone. Gabon has one of the highest income per capita in Central West Africa, but yet the poverty in the country is too high. And so I was hoping that he would have done things that will elevate the life of the Gabonese people.
But can it be said that it's just 1 year in power that you need to give them time to do more?
It's true that the president of the transition, he has done something. But the problem with what he has done something that I would call is sporadic. In other words, there's some families, there's some people who are very close to him who probably have their life enhanced, have their life bettered. That I can understand. But I believe that a president of a country should be able to take care of all the citizens of the country. That's why I'm giving him 5 out of 10. As a whole, the life of the majority of my countrymen has not changed.
The military government has promised to hold elections in August 2025. In fact, a draft constitution was presented to the transitional president. What stands out to you the most about the draft constitution?
Well, the Gabonese people will have a referendum coming up pretty soon, I believe before the end of this year. The problem with it is that the majority of my countrymen are not really aware or what's in that new draft constitution of Gabon. And I think that that's a real problem. The two things that we know, because, for example, they want the president to have a 7-year term and it's renewable once, which sounds good, but for me it's dangerous. Why? Because we have the potential of a president being in power for 14 years. And I believe strongly in my heart that this is too much, because Gabon has a history of men coming in power and staying in power. That's how the Bongo succeeded in being more than 55 years in power.
Frank Jock Ting is a Gabonese human rights and democracy activist. He was speaking with us from Toulouse, France. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, September 2nd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The Multi-Stakeholder Forum of Eswatini says it is disappointed with the decision of the Southern African Development Community, SADC, to remove the political situation in the country from the SADC agenda. SADC had been holding regular consultations with the Eswatini government and the opposition following deadly pro-democracy protests in 2021. Sivuano Yembe is the spokesperson for the Eswatini Multi-Stakeholders Forum. He tells me that the decision raises serious concerns about SADC's commitment to upholding democratic principles and human rights across Southern Africa.
We are very disappointed at SADC for SADC to have one-sided view of this issue. They've not contacted us to find out from us who have raised the complaint that Swaziland is not democratic, that the people in Swaziland need to meet to forge in a democracy that is based on multi-party democracy. So Swaziland has not changed at all from what it was before this call for a dialogue.
I spoke with the government spokesperson, and he said that the government continues to be engaged and that it was you, the multi-stakeholders forum, that boycotted or is continuing to boycott other cultural means of coming to resolution, including even the Sibaya.
Sibaya is not a dialogue. It is not a platform on which we can discuss politics, because Sibaya is actually one-sided, that people can just raise concerns that no one is responding to them. They cannot have a meaningful engagement in the Sibaya forum. That forum is not designed to discuss critical political issues.
What do you do now? What other means do you have to continue to pursue your objective for bringing about a democratic Eswatini?
We, the people of Swaziland, will continue with our political campaigns, our marches, our trying to get the government to come to table, to go to other international communities to deal with this. We will also continue to lobby SADC, because SADC always have new set of leaders. One of them will eventually be have leaders that understand democratic values. It's unfortunate that now we just have SADC leaders that do not appreciate the democratic values, that do not appreciate even the basis on which SADC was formed.
Sivu Mingwano Nyambi is the spokesperson for the Eswatini Multi-Stakeholders Forum. He was speaking with me from the capital, Mbabane. A spokesperson says the Eswatini government is pleased that the Southern African Development Community, SADC, has dropped the country from its agenda. SADC has been holding regular consultations with the Eswatini government and the Multi-Stakeholder Forum of Eswatini following deadly pro-democracy protests in 2021. Government spokesperson Alpheus Dumalo tells me that the SADC decision proves that Eswatini government can solve its own issues without compromising SADC principles.
First and foremost, the Kingdom of Eswatini had already taken very concrete steps to address issues and matters of concern that were raised by SADC. So the reaction of government is to first and foremost acknowledge the gallant effort that His Majesty has put and exerted in this process. And secondly, of course, it is to thank SADC Head of State for realizing that as per the United Nations founding principle, which guarantees member states the right to self-determine and to self-rule.
The Multi-Stakeholders Forum, they are saying that this SADC decision does not solve the problem of your government banning political parties and imprisoning opposition people. The SADC decision does not resolve these.
There is no SADC decision or opinion that can resolve imprisonment or sentencing or trial of people who offended the law. The people they are referring to were not arrested, put on trial, found guilty, and convicted or sentenced because of their political ideal. I'm telling you, my brother, some of the things we could be saying, we constrain and restrain ourselves from there. There is no political ideology or philosophy some of these guys are expounding. You know, they just found themselves lucky enough because they've got few coins in their pockets and they were in parliament and they were able to study that noise. You know, literally, they, as I may rightfully refer you to, right now they've made an appeal to the Supreme Court to mitigate against the number of years to which they've been sentenced. So it is not, they were not sentenced because of their political ideologies or political philosophy. They offended the law.
Alpheus Dumalo is the Eswatini government spokesperson. He was speaking with me from the Eswatini capital, Mbabane. Tens of thousands of Israelis protested in the streets Sunday night, demanding that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reach a ceasefire deal with Hamas after six more hostages were found dead in Gaza, including an American citizen. President Joe Biden said in a statement Sunday that he was devastated and outraged by the news. Earlier Sunday, Netanyahu Thaw to intensify the fight with Hamas. Meanwhile, labor leaders have called a one-day general strike today, Monday. VOA's Scott Waterman talk about this with Constanza Musu, and associate professor at the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Ottawa.
The resentment towards Netanyahu has always simmered and has exploded periodically, but the realization that hostages who had survived until now were only now killed and died as a result of the lack of an agreement, of a deal. It's really kind of uncorked a bottle of outrage.
I know we keep asking this question. We've been asking it for a long time, but I'm going to ask it again. How much can Netanyahu and his coalition withstand? Can they survive this?
For the past over 330 days, it seemed that they've been almost impermeable, almost, continued ahead and forged ahead with the strategy that has not worked, in the hope of keeping the coalition together and also, in a way, showing politically some kind of victory that, standing firm on certain things, on not withdrawing, on not leaving the Philadelphia corridor, et cetera, would, in a way, signify some kind of victory on the part of Israel and not being defeated by the blackmail of Hamas. But the Israelis care about the hostages. They want the hostages back. That is priority number one. And there is a complete separation between what the 100,000 of people in the street want and what the prime minister wants for himself and for his coalition.
What does it take to dislodge this coalition from power?
Well, this has been, you could say, a question that has vexed people. Well, even before October 7, right, with all the demonstrations that were political in nature over the judicial reform, and before that, all the corruption scandals that have plagued Netanyahu in the past years, and he seemed to have gone through each and every possible challenge, including the horror of October 7, and always found a way to continue. Now, what is happening now is also a general strike that is aimed at stopping the economy, essentially. So basically the whole country coming to a standstill to push Netanyahu out.
Constanza Musu is an associate professor at the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Ottawa. She spoke with viewers Scott Waterman. Some Gold Star families expressed support Sunday for former President Donald Trump after he was criticized for taking photos and videos at a restricted section of Arlington National Cemetery last week. Vice President Kamala Harris, who is also in the race for the White House, added her voice to those condemning Trump's visit and demanded it a political stunt. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
The Democratic presidential nominee, Vice President Kamala Harris, joined in the criticism of the Trump campaign for taking images last week of the former president's visit to Section 60 of the Arlington National Cemetery. Political activities in that section are strictly forbidden by federal law and Pentagon policies, and thus an altercation with a cemetery employee ensued. On Saturday, Harris addressed the issue in a message on X, formerly Twitter. "Let me be clear. The former president disrespected sacred ground, all for the sake of a political stunt." Trump, the Republican presidential nominee, repeated his counterargument Saturday that he was there at the invitation of relatives of soldiers who died in a terrorist attack during the 2021 U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan.
He said to me, I'm not surprised, I never even thought about it, "Sir, would it be possible for you to have a picture with us by the tombstone of my son?" I said, "Absolutely." I wasn't doing it for, I don't need publicity. I get a lot of publicity.
The Trump campaign released a statement and video clip Sunday by some Gold Star families backing his visit. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham was asked on ABC's This Week show whether he thinks the Trump campaign crossed the line.
"I'm all for looking at what happened. But you know what really is unfortunate? That these families had to go visit their fallen loved ones at Arlington due to incompetence by the Biden administration. Rise in terrorism, combine that with a broken border, another 9/11 is coming our way.
When it comes to securing the border, Harris's vision would prove the most effective, said Colorado Governor Jared Polis. He was asked to clarify if it would include building walls and how it compares to Trump's approach. The Democrat was also interviewed Sunday on ABC.
The border wall that Donald Trump has proposed is a huge boondoggle and waste of taxpayer money. He effectively talked about a wall across the entire border rather than using barriers of different kinds effectively. Kamala Harris's for is securing it in the most cost-effective way possible.
On the Labor Day holiday Monday, Vice President Harris will campaign in Michigan and Pennsylvania. On Tuesday, her campaign will launch the Fighting for Reproductive Freedom bus tour, with a kickoff event in Palm Beach, Florida. The Trump Vance campaign will hold events Tuesday in Braselton, Georgia, and Mesa, Arizona. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with athletics. Kenya's Mary Mora on Sunday shattered the 600 meters world record after storming into victory at the East of Berlin meeting in Germany. Mora, who is fresh from winning bronze at the Paris Olympic Games, clocked 1 minute 21.63 seconds, taking off 0.14 seconds in the previous record of 1 minute 23.77 seconds that was held by South Africa's Caster Semenya. Mora is also the two-lap race world champion after she stormed to victory at the 2023 World Athletics Championships in Budapest, Hungary. Staying with athletics, Kenya completed the World Athletics Under 20 Championships in Peru to place fifth with a total of 7 medals. Kenya won 3 gold medals, 3 silver and a bronze to wrap up the championships. And now to football. Cameroon marked their FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup debut with a spirited 2-2 draw against Mexico in their Group A opener in Colombia on Saturday, thanks to a brace by Naomi Eto'o. This result marks a historic moment for Cameroon, but also sends a strong message about the quality of the side in the competition. The draw breaks Mexico's streak of wins in opening matches, underlining the competitive nature of the Cameroonian side. Looking ahead, the Indomitable Lionesses will face Colombia in their next group match. 4 African countries, Cameroon, Ghana, Morocco and Nigeria, are taking part in the 11th edition of the FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup, with Colombia preparing to host a month-long festival. Staying with football news, former Ivory Coast defender Sol Samba is dead. Turkish club Andanaspor, where he was technical director, made the announcement on Saturday saying he had fallen ill before a match the day before. Bamba made 46 appearances for his country, representing Ivory Coast at the 2008 Olympics and in the 2012 Africa Cup of Nations. He also played for the likes of Cardiff City, Leeds United and Leicester City, and had spells at Italian side Palermo, Scottish clubs Dunfermline Athletic and Hibernian, and Turkish side Trabzonspor. And finally, in basketball news, the FIBA Regional Office Africa has announced a slight change in the dates for the commencement of the FIBA Under-18 AfroBasket 2024. Initially scheduled to start on Sunday, September 1st, the Under-18 Women's AfroBasket 2024 will now start on Monday, September 2nd, while the Under-18 AfroBasket 2024 will get underway on Tuesday, September the 3rd. Both tournaments will take place at the University of Pretoria, South Africa. These changes will allow the arrival of all participating teams. The finalists of the FIBA Under-18 Women's AfroBasket 2024 will represent Africa at the 2025 FIBA Under-19 Basketball World Cup in Czechia. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, September 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.
This is the voice of America. Washington, ba-ba-bo-zip.